You're listening to the Assistants Together podcast. My guest this week is the one and only Lucy Brazier. Lucy is so well known in our industry. She is the CEO of Marsham Publishing and publisher of Executive Support Magazine. Lucy has spoken at over 500 events in over 40 countries. She's delivered training and support to countless admin professionals in person and virtually. You're probably part of the Executive Support Facebook group. Maybe you've seen her on a Facebook Live or on YouTube. That's something she's been doing a lot of over the last year to support the community through the pandemic. Lucy and I speak about her work, what drives her to continue to be an advocate for the admin profession, and about an incredible new initiative that she's been part of called the Skills Matrix. This is going to be a massive game changer for our industry. And to top it all off, as if that wasn't enough, Lucy has just been awarded an OBE for her work. I know you're going to want to share this episode with anyone you know who's working in or involved in the admin community. There is so much to take away from today's conversation. Enjoy. Thank you very much, Lucy, for joining me today. It is so great to have you on the podcast. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. And thank you so much for the invite. It's really wonderful to spend time with you, Henrietta.
Oh, I can't wait to talk to you. We have a lot to cover and I'm conscious you're a very, very busy person. We need to get cracking with the actual questions that I've got for you and from other people. The people have sent me some questions too, so I'm going to ask you some of those later. But one of the things that as I was writing your introduction, I was just struck by the volume of work that you've done, your commitment to the community over the last decade or more. And I wondered if you kind of ever envisaged yourself in this position in your career. Is this what you'd expected life to be like when you actually took over the newsletter as it was in those days and launched the business on your own?
Not really, no. I think the truth is that I've always been a very, very busy person. My parents tell a story that when they went to go and look round the school that they sent me to, which was Godolphin and Latimer in Hammersmith, they got in there and everybody was talking as much and as fast as I did. And so they thought, oh, she'll fit here very nicely. And that school was all about the fact, I mean, they told you from when you got your place that you were in the top 2% of the country and that you had a responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I think that combined with my grandmother, who was a real role model in my life, but who really was always saying, your job is to leave today better for somebody than it was yesterday. So, I mean, I think the kind of combination of the two. But then actually, when I took on the newsletter, it was very much something that was on the back burner. Until I burnt out, which, you know, I know a lot of people out there know that story. But I burnt out and I then thought, oh, that magazine, maybe I could do that from my kitchen table. And actually, it was meant to be about work-life balance. And it never ended up that way because I got invited to speak in Italy and the rest is history. But I love to be busy. I can't think of anything worse than sitting around not doing anything. And actually, this isn't my work. It's my absolute passion. So how lucky am I?
Yeah, tremendously. And I've heard you talk about your burnout before, but how much do you think that influenced how you move forward in your career?
I think I am really passionate about people doing something that makes their heart sing. And I think for the longest time, because I was a single parent with three young children, my first husband left when I was 2 months pregnant with my third child. And I then remarried a little bit later on. And my second husband, well, hopefully my last husband, has been absolutely amazing with all three of my children. But I think I very much felt it was my responsibility. I think I worked doing all sorts of work that I mean, the publishing industry is a rat race, let's make no bones about it, and I'm not a rat, but I'd worked in it since I was 18, and I found it very, very difficult balancing my values and the way that I thought people should be treated, particularly with the way that very often people were treated in that industry. And I always felt like if I had my own thing, maybe I could do it differently. And I do feel like over the last 10 years, I have proved that. And that is absolutely at the heart of everything I do. It's got to be about the people. And that's whether it's staff or whether it's people that I'm, you know, working with within the industry.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you bring up values. It's something that I wanted to talk to you about because I feel like that's something that comes across in everything that you're doing. You know, that whether it's the lack of advertising in the magazine, whether it's your ability to collaborate with people in the industry, not see it as competition, whether you're bringing all this value to people for free, or the charity work that you do, and being such a huge advocate, I feel like your values come across very strongly. So I was interested when you commented on that.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I just want to do things and know that I can sleep at night. Yeah. And really, you know, this industry can be absolutely wonderful, but it can also be quite difficult. And yeah. I want to know at the end of the day, when I go to bed and I put my hand on my heart, that I can say I behave properly. And I do feel that way. It's absolutely at the core of everything I do.
Yeah, I think I completely understand what you're saying. I think that when you have your own initiative, whether it's a business, whether it's a community, you have to align yourself with your own values before you start that, because when you're taking something forward and out into the world, you have to be 100% clear on how you're going to represent it and how it's going to represent you out there. It seems like quite a conscious decision, and something I'm sure that's evolved over the time that you've been working on it.
I think that right at the beginning, I decided that it had to be about the assistant and it wasn't about me. And actually, that might sound weird with you saying that I'm so high profile, but if anybody comes to me and says, will you do this, or would you get involved in this, or my first thought is always, is this the right thing for the assistants? Yeah. And if it is, then we do it. And it stood me in very good stead. You know, over periods of time, I've had people coming saying, will you endorse this product? We'll pay you a lot of money if you will, you know, write an article about this in the magazine. Or, and if I look at it and I think, well, actually, no, it doesn't do anything for them. It's purely about, I just don't do it. It's not. And I think the longevity comes from that, because I think they know, the assistants know, that they are truly at the heart of everything that I do. Yeah. And that's why when I do say to them, I think you should do this, they trust me.
Yeah, absolutely. Building that over time and consistency in your message. And I know, you know, I've heard you speak about the kind of big shift in the industry in 2008, which I remember very vividly, a time where I had my own issues at work, for sure. And I know that was such a pivotal time for assistants in their roles, in the sense that they were catapulted often from one type of assistant role into then moving into more of a value add in a business, and having to prove their ability to, you know, kind of morph into lots of different types of role, take on different kind of maybe middle management jobs, even whether it was finance or HR. We saw that change. How do you think COVID has sort of accelerated that further change for the assistant community? It's something that people were talking about a lot on the podcast, how the last year's impacted people. I wonder what your thoughts were, having witnessed the sort of change after the recession and now after COVID, or throughout it and ongoing. What kind of changes do you think there continue to be?
I think it's a, let's see it all again. These things are cyclical, aren't they? Yes. And here we are again. And
yes, that's, you know, how I felt at the beginning of the pandemic. I was like, not again.
Yes, totally. Yeah. But I mean, I'm old now, Hen. So, you know, it's like, this is like third or fourth time around for me. But it's, you know, it, again, they're all being asked to do all sorts of work they don't know how to do. And they're getting no training, and they're getting no pay rises. And, you know, and it's a huge amount of opportunity that's been opened up, I think. And to me, this pandemic is the greatest opportunity they're ever going to have to step into the role that they want it to be, because everything just changed. And so what's one more change? And so all the things they've always wanted it to be are there and a low-hanging fruit to take. Mm-hmm. But you have to have an executive that trusts you, and you have to have built that trust with them over a period of time in order for them to allow you to do that. And having said that, there's never been a more important time for the assistant to be taking that process and procedure stuff and getting it done. And all the things that they've wanted to do for ages, like, you know, truly managing the email and proper calendar management and research and putting together project management documents or briefing documents, or, you know, just getting involved far more with the strategy of the business, really. Mm. It's a time almost, I think, to sit there and go, okay, so here is a pile of metaphorical paper, which is the things that need doing. And I am going to take this one, and I am going to take this one, and this one. I might let you have that one, but actually the business is paying you to go and do your job. And right now, the world of business needs them to go and do it. So let me get on with supporting you. And by supporting you, I don't mean support as in sitting outside here. What I mean is you're working in partnership, and you should be moving forward together, and you should have some kind of compelling and emotional dream that you're both working towards, and the goals that the businesses have set at the other end of that to get there. But actually, you should be doing that together, not sitting outside it or following along behind. It is about proper collaboration. And actually, I've been talking a lot about collaboration quite recently, because I think up until quite recently, it was still that archetypal, well, the assistant is down here and the executive is much, much higher, and the executive is telling the assistant what to do. Whereas collaboration is all about not just working together, but thinking together and having that trust and having that respect, and both of you having your skill sets that are totally different, but actually using that to get to the common goal at the end of it. It isn't about leadership and servant relationship. It's about a proper, respectful partnership. And that has got to be where it ends up moving forwards, because the days of managing people from fear or telling them what to do in the world of work, full stop, just changed. So, you know, I think the future is probably very good for those assistants that understand that the task-based stuff is going to go probably to artificial intelligence. And I know you had Rhonda Scarfe on the last episode, and she talked about that. But, you know, the task-based stuff will go. If you can do something repetitively twice, it can be automated. But where the assistants really win is with all the human-based skills, because that's what the future of work is anyway. It's about, you know, working with people and communication and the complex problem solving and the critical thinking and emotional intelligence and creativity and all the things that the assistants are so amazing at, actually.
Yeah, that's what they really can excel at, naturally, a lot of them. I think a lot of businesses, it seems to me, are... Yeah, a lot of very big businesses have recognised, because of the transition in COVID, that they need perhaps a new CEO or partly a new leadership team to take them out through this and guide them through this. And that seems to me completely in line with what you're saying about assistants stepping more into that role, taking the opportunity to see themselves in a new light, to kind of understand their own abilities within that and how they can transition with the company and their new goal, because a lot has changed. The parameters have changed in so many businesses so quickly. Yeah, it's a very, very different landscape.
It's very interesting, actually, when you talk to them, because they're saying that, to me anyway, that they really love the Zoom stuff because it means they're all in the same size boxes. So you don't have Mary from marketing sweeping in her bright red dress and being, you know, full of body language all over the place that makes them feel intimidated. Everybody is actually sitting there, and many of them are telling me they're finding that very useful for finding their voice. But I think it is rethinking it. It's saying, okay, where can I add value and where can I take on greater responsibility? Not more work.
Yes.
But, you know, looking at what the business is doing and where they fit, because many of them are saying to me, like you're saying, like they did in 2008, oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed. I've got so much work. I don't know how I'm ever going to get through it. The other half of them, and oh, and by the way, if that's you, make a note of it, because that's the thing I would have advised in 2008. Keep a note of it, so when you come to your year-end appraisal, you're able to sit there and say, this is what I achieved during COVID and here's where I stepped up, because then later on you can talk pay rises, not maybe immediately, but in a little while. But the other side, of course, is the people who are crying into their cereal and saying, I don't know what to do. They're not giving me any work. And I feel like we're going to come out the other end of this and I'm going to be out because they don't know the value I add. And I'm just like, for goodness sake, get a grip. Mm-hmm. And I'm not being mean. I don't think anybody else will tell them that. It's just like, for goodness sake, what are the things you could be doing? They are busy saving the world. They don't want to have to come and tell you what your job is. If, you know, if Matt was to come to me and say, what is it that you think I should be doing? I'd say, I don't care. Whatever it is I'm paying you to do, just go do the thing, you know?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, you have to take your initiative. In times of crisis, we all have to kind of like, you know, as my mum would say, pull our socks up and get on with it. Like,
yes.
You know, and find a way through it and find a way to really be involved and see it as a challenge. And it's, I feel like that can be the thing that so many of us at different points in our lives can get stuck at, that it's the emotional component where we kind of get stuck rather than approaching it from a really practical standpoint of what can I do next that's going to help the organizational goals. And that's something you have talked about a lot, I know.
It's being the voice in the room that's about process and procedure, because most executives would rather stick pins in their eyes than do that stuff. And there is a real value right now to being the person in the room that does get it, because everybody else is going, I've had a wonderful idea and let's try this and this is amazing. And actually what you need is somebody to go, and I know how to make that work.
Yes, because that's not usually me. I don't know about you, but that's not usually me that knows how to make that work. And if I have to, I find it either really slow and laborious, or I just get bored and move on to something else, because I'm not good at that. I'm good at bigger vision, not execution.
And that's why I have Matt. Because, you know, I say, I've had this amazing idea, and Matt goes pale because he knows it's going to be him that has to put it into place. But he actually really likes doing that. Okay, let's look at how we get from A to B to C to D, and let's track it and let's see how it's going. And now I can report back on it. You know, I have a great team. I'm very lucky.
You are very, very lucky indeed.
Yeah.
And I know that you've spoken a little bit about the skills matrix and that initiative. And I was wondering if you could fill everyone in about what's been happening in the last few months. This is an enormous change in our industry that I'm so excited to find more about and to hear about.
I sat having breakfast about 5 years ago with Zelda Nkhonji, who was Mandela's assistant in South Africa, and she said, talk me through this thing again that you're trying to do. And I told her, and she said, holy cow, if you get this right, you're going to change the working lives of 500 million women. And actually, I think we're about to do it, which is so exciting. And, you know, right at the beginning, I went away from that meeting going, oh, my gosh, that's such a, you know, like, what? And then I got home and I watched Made in Dagenham, which happened to be on TV that evening. And I thought, well, you know, somebody's got to do it. So let's get on with it. And actually, I have been very instrumental in driving it, but it's come out of World Administrators Alliance. World Administrators Alliance is like the G7 for our industry. It's the heads of the associations right the way across the world. And they've been meeting since 1991, I think, every 2 to 3 years. And it's all about what's best for the profession globally. And so I was very lucky. I was invited in 2015 to go to Papua New Guinea to chair it. And at that particular meeting, we were talking about how do we professionalize this role? And we decided between us that the way to do it was to make sure that there was some kind of global framework for career progression, because that would actually mean that everybody knew where they stood. Mm. And so we kind of blithely went away going, well, let's do something about this. And I can't get involved in the writing of it or the research of it or anything else, because I'm obviously not an association and that it's made up of those people. But they went off, they did 3 years of research, and then they came back and they said, all the countries are arguing amongst themselves about the job titles, because there's 162 of them. And
162!
162, and that's before you look in translation. And so, you know, just look at the UK. You've got a PA who could be on reception or a PA who could be looking after a CEO, and then you've got executive assistant. In America, you've got an administrative assistant or a executive assistant. A PA is somebody who looks after a celebrity or someone of high net worth. In Europe, it's a management assistant, and that's before you get into anything else. So we decided, okay, no job titles. And then we decided that actually we would not have job descriptions either, because I could be sitting next to somebody who had a totally different job description to me in the same business. But equally, most businesses are just doing this generic thing with the "and anything else we might like to throw at you" line at the
100%.
Bottom.
Yeah.
Yes. And yet, you know, in the States, the Bureau of Labor has only got one category for assistants, and that's the level which are task based and very junior. So when you see all the headlines in the press saying the role is going, yes, they are at that level. But yeah, the EA role is actually by Glassdoor saying it's one of the top 10 roles in the world. So, you know, it's all very, very confused. So anyway, we decided at that point in Frankfurt in 2018 that what we would do is to go away and to put together five levels, which clearly showed the career progression from beginning to end. And we would put the skills next to it that we felt that would work. Mm-hmm. And again, that wasn't me. It went off. And actually, it was a lady called Vicky Faint in New Zealand who ended up writing that report based on the research with Eth Lloyd, who some of you will know Eth Lloyd, but if you don't, she's remarkable. I think she's 72 years old now, and up until she was 50, she thought she was stupid. But she's also one of the very few people in the world to have done a piece of academic research into the profession. So the two of them wrote this report, and what we've ended up with is a matrix which takes you from level one to level five, with level one being entry level or return to work. So the people who are needing to learn about working in an office and the basic skills, I guess. Level two is transactional and task-based and reactive. So it's basically, I suppose, what you would have thought of a traditional assistant as doing, being told what to do and getting on with it. Mm-hmm. Level three is being transactional and reactive, moving into being proactive. So it's where you're starting to think, okay, so they've asked for half an hour meeting. Does it need to be half an hour? Does it need to be today? And should I just slot it into that space, or is there a better way to do it? Yes, just as an example. And a lot of assistants, I think, get stuck there either because their business doesn't understand what they're capable of. And 58% of the people we surveyed said they didn't think their business understood what they were capable of. They felt underutilized. 70% were saying that they had little or no career progression. So this is the problem we're up against. Okay, so that's levels one to three. Level four then is, oh, by the way, the other reason they don't move out of level three is because they don't think they're capable.
Yeah.
And that's a huge issue. They're worried that if they get to level four, which is totally proactive and autonomous and probably C-suite and probably governance and managing projects rather than just working in them and really driving things forward, they're worried that if they get to that level, they won't be able to cope with it, which actually, it is a lot of education, I think, to get to a level four. But I do think that, you know, many of them that don't see themselves as capable, the businesses could do with them stepping up to that level, and they would be more than capable of doing it.
Agreed with you 100%, 100 on that. It's a lot to do with confidence in that situation, I think.
Totally. And then a level five is a chief of staff. And actually, a chief of staff, I don't think, is a natural progression for an assistant. I think the reason we've put it there is because in America, particularly, like every other thing in this marketplace, they're getting confused and they don't know what to do with the EAs. So they're saying, oh, well, we'll promote you to chief of staff. And then all the other EAs are going, well, why are they chief of staff? We're doing the same role. And it's because nobody understands what it actually is and that they need change management education and people management education. And it's more of a senior vice president role, actually. Mm-hmm. And so we put it in there so that the businesses will look and say, oh, that's what a chief of staff, that's the difference, we get it now. Or they'll look and they go, you know, I don't think we're using our assistants like this. Are we missing a trick? This is, you know, I think quite extraordinary. But the other thing that is so exciting to me is that at each level, it's going to give us performance management. It's going to mean there'll be a barometer as to what people should get paid. It's going to mean you can go from one company to another and say, I'm a level three assistant, and everybody should understand what that means. It means if you, as a recruitment agent, are advertising for a role, you suddenly have a rubric. The HR departments will have an idea of what they're hiring for. Yeah. But also, to me, it's about ensuring that at each level you have excellence, because surely what every business wants is to have a world-class business support function that underpins what the stakeholders are doing, so that the business is supported at the highest level. Mm. And so, to me, this does that. It means that you can have people who don't want to move past the level two, and that's fine, but they can strive for excellence and be measured as being excellent in their profession and their self-actualization, because you're saying that's what that looks like. And that's something we've never had before.
We've never had it. It is a complete game changer across the board, from, as you said, hiring, performance management, training, career progression. It will allow people to have, I think, a lot of freedom in their roles when they're defined in this way. To me, so much of the difficulties that is communicated to me through my conversations comes from not understanding where they want to go in their career, how they can get there, what does that mean, what does it look like, who's going to give you the opportunity to step up into different roles. And maybe they don't want to end up in a chief of staff role, you know, and there's a lot of narrative that improve, get better. It, for many people, they like the role that they're doing and they want to do really well in it. It isn't a question of endless progression. And I think that's what this kind of framework is going to allow people to have, like you said, that freedom to choose what's important to them at different points in their career and how they can move through it and how they can really become confident at what they're doing and be able to describe it. Because that's one of the things we find so difficult, is to talk about what we do and how we interact with the business. And that's something I talk to people about all the time, that topic. It's excruciatingly difficult without a framework to really explain to people who you are, what you do, and what you can bring to a business. It's a very abstract concept.
Well, this, I think, that's why we've also done a tasks matrix. So you've got the skills matrix at the top, which has got the 1 to 5 and all the skills. But then there's a second matrix, which is the tasks that you can expect them to do. And what we're hoping is that because we haven't put in job titles, it will mean that the businesses will be able to map what they've got already to the different levels. Yeah. And the third part of the jigsaw, actually, which isn't there yet, but we decided that we needed to get this out there now, mainly because of COVID, actually, because it was always planned to be coming about now anyway. But as I said at the beginning, everything just changed. And so in a period where everything just changed, let's make sure that this is one of the changes that happens so that everybody understands it. But I think also a little later on down the line, there will be a credentialing matrix as well that will say, here are the various training courses across the world that are mapped to each of the different levels that we have found. And that, again, is World Administrators Alliance doing that. It's not me. It's just that because I'm appear to have got this role of ambassador, I shall, and because I travel so much, it just makes sense that I'm talking to all the businesses that I'm working with.
I know that you mentioned you have support from pretty large companies already, very large companies, who are really in favour of being able to utilise this.
Oh, they're backflipping. I mean, really, it's I've got one of the biggest recruitment companies in the world who's saying they'll cascade it to their clients. I've got two of the big four saying they'll cascade it down to their clients. You know, I'm working with some of the really big tech companies at the moment, and we're going through with their guys what's happening. I actually did a presentation the other week to a business in America, which is a $64 billion business, and I talked to their board about the assistants and how they might use them. And what's really interesting is that they were a little bit sounds interesting, until I said, our latest survey said 58% of your assistants don't feel like they're being properly utilized, at which point they all went, because for a business to be paying salaries to people who don't feel like they're being utilized is massive.
Yeah, that's massive. Huge. I mean, you've hit them with the bottom line, haven't you? Which is where they want to hear what's going on.
Well, totally. But the other thing that's really interesting is that the other big paper that got presented at World Administrators Summit about 3 weeks ago was the one on diversity and inclusion. And actually, Paula Moyo and Melba Duncan and Sarah Richson, you know, some of the really amazing leaders with a very diverse background had all got together. I pulled them together after Black Lives Matter last year and then said, look, just get on with it. And I talked to Eth and said, can they present a paper on the industry and why it is that, particularly when I'm in America, when there are two streams, one for the lower level and one for the higher level, the white people seem to turn right and the people of colour seem to turn left to go to the lower level. And I wanted to understand why that was happening. And I think it's very much a case that you can't be it if you can't see it. And I wanted the associations particularly to be aware, but not just of colour, of, you know, diversity on all different levels. And how are we making sure that we have got people on stage that look like everybody out there?
Yeah, absolutely. Really.
But one of the things that was so brilliant about that paper, and I mean, it really blew my mind, was that Simone White, who you might be familiar with, but Simone White is the top lady at BlackRock for assistance. But in her summing up of that paper, she talked about the fact that she felt that the assistant role not being treated properly was an issue of inclusion in its own right. And that actually we should be talking to our HR departments about the fact that they are not being included in training or in career progression or in performance review or in business decisions, and they are out here somewhere. And that is truly for business an issue around inclusion. And actually, if you start framing it in that term, in those terms, the businesses are going to have to do something about it. Yeah, I think that's really interesting.
That's fascinating, because it's absolutely true, isn't it? I mean, it's absolutely what we've seen for years and years, that the sidelining and sort of marginalising of assistants in terms of learning, for example, and just like you said, every element of their position within a business is absolutely an inclusion issue.
And I know that we say, you know, I know there's a lot of kind of campaigning about getting more men into the profession. And of course, I have Matthew. And so I totally agree with that. But I do also think the fact that it's 98% women and that it is the biggest profession for women in the world has a lot to do with that. It's still seen as women's work. And I don't think that they would have got away with it for so long if it was a male profession.
No, I 100% agree with you. I was going to ask you about, it was certainly my experience, certainly something I've spoken about before, that I think a lot of the issues that assistants are facing are feminist issues. And I don't think that you can, as you said, if there's 98% of the profession are women, that you can't remove one from the other. It's fundamentally ingrained in the profession that we're asking people to take a seat at the table, to lead in a different way, to evolve and commit and change their careers. That's all the kind of things that we've all experienced as women in our own careers, having to be able to do that and take that space for ourselves in our careers.
I think part of the reason why I identify so closely with this profession is because I always felt like I was a misfit in business world. I mean, I always worked in publishing areas that were traditionally men. I was 29 when I became a publisher for the very first time, and I walked into an office where the average age was 60 and they were all men who looked a little bit like Uncle Bulgaria. And it took them about 3 months, I suppose, to work out that I wasn't there to make the tea, and after that we got on fine. But you know, I so actually I always looked at them and thought, I really get this, that they're not seeing you and understanding what you're capable of. And it isn't just getting your seat at the table, it's being part of the conversation. And I have to keep saying that to them. Yes, it's great sitting at the table, but please don't sit at the table taking the minutes thinking that you're part of the leadership team. If you're sat at the table with the leadership team, it's because you need to be an active participant. And that is about reminding your executive what they have agreed to do, reminding everybody else what they've agreed to do so that that's delivered in a timely fashion, watching people's body language, having something to add to the conversation because you understand what your value is. Mm. And your value right now, as I said already, is that you're a chaos tamer. You're the one who steps up and takes the chaos and organizes it.
Yeah.
You know, what is your value around that table? Please don't sit there just taking minutes, because taking minutes is great, but with AI, we've got otter.ai, let's use that, let's use Dictate, let's get rid of that stuff, because all it's doing is meaning that you're not an active participant.
Yeah, and the tech element, I'm interested to get your perspective, because I embrace tech in the sense that it means I don't have to do something I'm not very good at. And that's how I view it. But I understand that my career isn't, I haven't built a career on being able to do things for other people in that way. I certainly have. Tech is a huge issue in the recruitment industry. How is it being utilized? How are companies recruiting? How do I adapt to that? So I understand some of the sense of, you know, parts of my role being taken away from me. You can go onto LinkedIn, you can apply for jobs, you can find out about things. It's easier than ever to do that. But for me, I approach it as this, great, that's another thing I don't have to do. What do I do? How can I bring companies, my clients, value, rather than feeling that something's being taken away from me? I wonder what your thoughts are about that in terms of the training that you're delivering. I know that you focus on tech a lot. How do you feel about it?
I think that it is just going to give them the ability to free up their time to step into the role that it needs to be moving forwards. And actually, you say we do a lot of tech. Execsec Tech, which, well, it's now ES Tech, of course, since the rebranding. Matt will tell me off for getting the name wrong. The reason we launched that is because after we'd done Global for the first time, we wrote to everybody and we said, what do you want next? And they came back and said, oh my gosh, there is just so much tech. And I am that far ahead. I am one step literally ahead of my executive. At any minute now, they're going to catch me out and realize I don't know what I need to know. Mm-hmm. And it would be amazing just to have once a year an event that was telling us what we need to know since last year. What are the new things coming up? So that we can go, actually, we really need to know that. That's really useful. But we don't need to know that. And there's almost as much value in knowing what you don't need to know, because there's so much of it. Because you think you go do demos of all these things. It's a nightmare. You could spend your whole life trying to work out what is the best way to do things. Mm-hmm. But actually, to me, I think it's about going and talking to your IT department, talking about what's coming next, making sure you're one step ahead. Maybe you'll go to YouTube, and YouTube's a wonderful thing. And don't tell me you don't use it, because I know they all do. They all go and train.
They all do. Anything I don't know how to do, I'm on YouTube trying to work out how to do it.
Exactly. And so to me, the whole thing with AI is that it's going to be great. You know, it doesn't have emotions, it doesn't get sick, it doesn't have PMT, it just gets on and does things. So great, use it. Diana Brandl, who is, Diana Brandl, she's an amazing trainer around tech, but she talks about a company in Germany where they have Alexa in every room, for example. And Alexa sits there and you say, Alexa, remind me, please, that I need to do this. Please, can you book me a cab? Please, can you order more copier paper? Please, can you set the room for the meeting? And the lights come down and the blinds go down and the projector comes up. And there are 100,000 business applications for Alexa now. Well, you know, all that stuff is deathly boring.
Yes.
Deathly boring. Is that what we really want to be doing with our lives? No, probably not. So great, let Alexa do it. She's the assistant's assistant.
Yeah.
And then I can get on and do the things that I are actually going to add value to the business and to my executive.
It's a really exciting time, I think. Such an exciting time for people to be shaping and carving out their career. You know, I've recruited for 12 years, I think, now, maybe 13. And just seeing what people's careers can look like, the possibilities, it's just opened up more and more and more. And if you can step into it, as you were talking about, step into the opportunities and create more for yourself, it's never ending. It's one of the most exciting careers, I think. You know, that's why I've recruited in it for such a long time, because it's so interesting. It's so different in different companies. You can step from one industry to another. the possibilities are just endless.
I do think right now they have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, though. Yeah. I think they have to stop asking permission to go and do things and go do them. I think if you're sitting there right now and you're feeling comfortable, you're probably in the wrong profession, because everything is so up in the air. I very often say that it's like we've taken a pack of playing cards and thrown them up in the air, and now we're waiting to see where they land.
Yeah.
But the great thing is that we're the ones who are creating what that looks like at the other end.
It's exciting.
Then you have to be part of the conversation, and that is uncomfortable. Change is always uncomfortable. But if I told you nothing was ever going to change again, you'd be horrified. So, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity to carve out a profession, which it now is for us, but also for future generations.
Amazing. Now, all the work that you've already done, everything that you've already achieved, has been formally recognised in such an incredible way. You received an OBE, you're an officer of the British Empire. How did it feel when you found out? How did it feel? It's huge.
Deeply humbling, actually. It's not something that I'd ever really thought would happen, or that I'd ever aspired to, or, you know, I just get on with doing what I'm doing, really. I'm very much in my own channel and in my own bubble, and, you know. And so I got back from a meeting, and my new assistant, Fran, who some of you will have spoken to already, who is German, said to me, "Lucy, you have a letter from the Queen." I was like, "I have what? What are you talking about?" And actually, it was an email that had come in because of COVID, they're emailing, and it was from the Cabinet Office saying that the Prime Minister had recommended to the Queen that I got this award. And I was just totally blown away. And they don't tell you who recommended you for it either. And it's a two-year process where they check into absolutely everything, and your inside leg measurement. I mean, just... And even then, they tell you may not have got it. They're still doing final checks. And until it appears in the Gazette the day before the Queen's birthday, you don't know whether you really have got it or not. So I do know now who recommended me, actually. But I don't know what they said. But I feel very, very blessed. And the thing I'm most excited about, Hen, actually, is the fact that it gives me a platform to springboard off for the profession, because I'm going to get to go and talk to all sorts of companies that might not have taken me seriously beforehand because I've got those letters after my name. And that to me is what's so exciting. It's never about me, it's always about them. So, you know, if I can use it to do some amazing things for the profession, fantastic.
I know that you will. You're going to take every opportunity to elevate and communicate to companies and other people about what our profession is about what our community is about. So I know that you'll do that. It's massive congratulations. It is an enormous accomplishment to have those letters after your name. It's very, very cool. When I saw your, I saw it on Facebook, I was like, oh my God, that's incredible. You know, it's just such a really big honor to receive it. Really amazing.
Well, it's a bit, I mean, the announcement that I put on LinkedIn has now had 47,000 views.
Wowzers.
And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Oh my God.
That's so cool. And so what do you think, if I can ask you one final question, if you had to say just two things to everybody at the moment. I know you have imparted some incredible pieces of wisdom throughout the conversation. If there were just two things that people had to focus on over the next 6 to 12 months in their career, what should people be doing?
Communication, firstly. Communication is at the heart of everything for an assistant. So work out where you want to be. Work out where you want to be. Once the skills matrix comes out in a couple of weeks' time, work out what level you're at and work out whether you do want to move up or whether you want to stay where you are. But if you want to stay where you are, how are you going to make yourself exceptional at that level? And that is about communicating with your HR department and your executive and, you know, other people in the business, what it is that you're contributing. And then secondly, I would say, look at where you can add value and look at where you can take on greater responsibility. Because nobody actually understands what it is that you do. Well, many of them don't. And so if you're looking at that and saying, I'm employed by my business, I'm not employed by my executive. There's a huge distinction, and I think we forget that sometimes. And so you need to be thinking about why you're employed by your business. Mm. And the reason you're employed by your business is to give your executive back time so that the business is getting as much out of every hour of salary that they're paying as they possibly can. Yeah. So how are you going to free up their time? Stop thinking about yourself as a gatekeeper of people. Stop thinking about yourself as a gatekeeper of time, and look at where you add value. Look at where you take on greater responsibility so that your executive can get on with saving the world, because right now they need to. But also, that's how, when you come out the other end of this, they're going to go, I don't know how I did it without them. They were exceptional.
I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time, for sharing all of that, and for being instrumental in leading the way for change within the industry. The skills matrix is going to be an incredible, incredible game changer, I'm sure.
Oh, thank you, Hen. And thank you for the opportunity. It's really, really wonderful to catch up with you.
That's fantastic. I know that everybody asks at the end of podcasts, how can people get in touch with you? But I'm going to assume everybody knows how to do that, so that you don't have to read out the website address for the 96,000th time. But I will put all the details in the show notes if you don't know how to get hold of Lucy. And you can contact me if you really need some help. But I reckon you're going to all be able to find her just fine online if you're not connected already. Thank you very much indeed. Have a brilliant day. Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you, Hen.
How amazing was that? I loved talking to Lucy. What an incredible time to be speaking with her as well, because not only has she achieved this incredible recognition that I know will, as she mentioned, help open doors for her to speak to other organisations, businesses at a different level, but also the skills matrix and what that means. And just, I'm sure that you are going to have felt the kind of magnitude of what that means for the profession, and how in so many different ways it being rolled out globally is going to allow so many of us to choose how we move our careers forward and how we become, as Lucy said, excellent at what we do, whatever level we want to work at. Thank you so much for listening. Please, if this has given you any value and that you've enjoyed listening to it, please share it with a friend. Share this episode about the skills matrix, because that is really going to change how we work, how we do business, how we get to where we want to in our careers. And I was very grateful that she was able to speak to me about it. Have a great week. I am back with another fantastic guest next week. Enjoy. Take care.